welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this final hour of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are joined by Tom Horn of SkywatchTV.com and Steve Quayle from SteveQuayle.com. Tom, I'm going to turn it back over to you. You were about to make a point right before the break.
Yeah, well, in following up with part of what Steve was saying, and Steve, as you know, when I saw the last documentary that you produced, I said at the time, that's the standard, that's the gold standard by which all other Christian documentary films are made. And I had never said that about your any of your other productions. I never said it about anybody else's documentary filmmaking, but it, in every way, it was the best Christian documentary film I had ever seen, from scripting to content, to the music playing in the background, to the timing between scene changes. I mean, everything about this was a full-on best of Hollywood level production. But I can now say, and I've only seen little parts of this, the new documentary, well, of course, being part of the research and being able to be, you know, in the Four Corners area, spending weeks of time with you behind the scenes, where we went, what we filmed, what we were told, and being able to film some of the evidence, locations, and things like that that you're going to reveal in your documentary film. I'm kind of dancing around some of the subject matter here. But I can now say that this is going to become the new standard. Well, at least that's what you and Tim are telling me. And I believe
it is.
Groundbreaking information. It's going to demand the history of America be rewritten. That's not, you know, that's a statement that people have used in the past. This time it's real. It really is honestly going to demand that a great portion of America's history has to be rewritten. Now, Steve, at the September conference, so, again, people should realize there's the book, Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters. There's the companion documentary film that you're producing, which is probably going to be 1.5 to 2 hours long at least.
Two hours long
that you're producing. But because there is so much information here, you also decided that you would have a conference. It's going to be in Branson. Why don't you tell people how they can register to be there, who the speakers are going to be, and what are people, you know, like Anselm P. Rambla, whom I've never met, but I know he celebrated. What's he going to be revealing to audiences? I mean, I kind of know a little bit. It's stuff that's contained beneath a specific Catholic church by the Vatican. But why don't you tell people who Anselm is, what his credentials are, and who some of the other people are that are going to be at this conference, and how, if they want to come, how can they register?
Well, first of all, there's a specific web page that we'd like to send everybody to. It's called Gen6, G-E-N-S-I-X, conferences, plural, .com. Gen6conferences.com. Tim, when he was in Peru, basically met and talked to Anselm P. Rambla, actually talked to him in Spain. He lives in Spain. And Anselm has been a world-class explorer all over the world. He was the guy that discovered the Chincana, the great underground tunnel system in which the Incas were able to evade, a lot of Incas were able to evade the conquistadors when Pizarro, some people pronounce it, basically ransacked Peru looking and going for all the gold. Anselm is, by the way, he's got to be, he looks like the, you know, that commercial. What a great looking guy. He just looks the part. And he's going to be there, and he speaks Spanish, but he'll have an instant interpreter as he speaks. And he's going to reveal things, and I only know bits and pieces, that no one in the world has ever seen or heard. He told Timothy, and by the way, he at this point, you know, is one of the foremost archaeologists in the world, but he had the Vatican shut him down because of what he found. And And it's the same thing, ladies and gentlemen, that Tom is talking about in us on the Native American Sacred Site report that was done by University of Arizona for the Defense Department. The thing that's important is that he has chosen, until this time, he said this to Tim, obviously in Spanish on the phone, and Tim speaks Spanish, that he knew there would come a time when he must release all the decades of information that he never believed would be released until that time. And he's basically saying, this is time. Now, I think that's fascinating because he's coming at it from a non-Christian perspective. He's coming at it from a classic archaeologist. He's coming from a knowing that the official denials by the Catholic Church and the government, again, the same shadow government that shut us down with the person in Sand Canyon shut him down and shut him off. But praise God, Tom, we get the ability to have one of the great, I'm talking about Thor Heyerdahl kind of guy. I'm talking about guys who are in the Explorers Club, Percy Fawcett, who found the lost city of Z, or was looking for it before he was murdered, and 125 people went looking for him, and he was murdered by the, they were murdered by the cannibals. But I would say this, here's what's going to be different. First of all, Timothy Alberino, L.A. Marzulli, and Anselm P. Rambla all center in South America. Now, it's called the Navel of Civilization. Derek Gilbert's going to be the first speaker because he has done a masterful job in his book Inception.
Yeah.
He was kind enough to send me the PDF. Dr. Michael Lake on the Shinar Directive, and I'm going to be talking, I'm going to be one of the last speakers. You're going to be speaking Friday night, and you're going to be speaking on your findings, and I'm going to be basically the guy who speaks the last night on what it all leads to. But this is not a statement of, this is not, quote, bragging rights. For the first time in history, and I'm the one that wrote this, so I guess I can read what I wrote, the most cutting-edge and up-to-date researchers and authors concerning giants, fallen angels, ancient civilizations, and now the unfolding genetic war between men and beasts will be gathered together for the True Legend Conference in Branson, Missouri. Now, it's September 15th through the 17th, and Pastor David Langford will be there. And David has, I brought him on talk radio with me, I think 24, 23 years ago. And David knows what's going on. He's going to be speaking to encourage the people of God. And last time he was in, both Texas and in Bozeman at the Whitestone Conference, there was a powerful move of God. We're going to lay it out for people, and then God's going to give his people. This we know in our spirits, and Pastor Langford has got a remarkable relationship with the Lord through prayer and fasting. Dr. Michael Lake, obviously, and you're, you know, I won't call you Pastor Tom Horn because that's not your place right now. You have been. But the point is I think it's interesting. It's the old and new crowd coming on the scene to basically teach people what God has independently taught us all these years and through all these books we've written, all the interviews we've done. And what I want to share with people is, and I'm still working on the exact way, we're going to have a giant screen about, I don't know, 12 feet by 40 feet or something like that. You've seen them, the big, great big screens. And those things are astonishing because we're going to present filmic evidence that we're not going to release anyplace. We're going to show it on purpose to the people that have come, who have prayed for us, who have supported us. And there's going to be some mind-blowing stuff. And again, with what has been taking place with the web bots, and ladies and gentlemen, I want to share this with you. Gordon McDonald, as Tom shared, he's the guy that's running this, doing a marvelous job. But he tells me that because there's other things going on in Branson, Missouri, there's only so many rooms there. So go to Gen6Conferences.com. And what I'm trying to do is have the people that are speaking give at least 30 minutes for questions. They will be pre-submitted and read out loud. That saves all the hemming and hawing. So since I'm not the most patient guy in the world, and you've done more, you know, conferences than I have, that, you know, that's basically patience and me don't go in the, but, you know, the him and Han, and they really want to ask, I don't mean that. I want people to be able to address Thomas Horn when you are speaking about what you're speaking. When Anselm will have an interpreter, you can ask him anything you want. So I hate not, you know, people leaving a conference. Now, obviously, there's a time limit on this stuff, because it starts on a Friday morning, and I think we have four speakers a day or three speakers a day. You know, we'll settle that, but we're leaving a half an hour to 45 minutes for people to ask questions. The questions will be pre-submitted. But again, the idea is this. The exploration, investigation, and education of the reality of the world before the flood of Noah and the tremendous, if you will, signs and portents they bode for the days we now live in. So I think it will be mind-blowing. And Timothy Alvarino will be there. And I can tell you this, I'm trying to get Tim. Tim, you need to know people. Let me share this with you. I can't give the details because I'm not sworn to secrecy, but I'm not at liberty to tell this. The most powerful and most well-funded documentary companies in the world are partaking on two of the most famous expeditions that have failed. And they're calling, you know, Gen 6. And you know what they wanted me to do? Not talk about Jesus so much, okay? And that's really true. But, you know, the interesting thing is, in one location, you're going to love this, Tom, they volunteered the information, blonde-haired, blue-eyed giants that are cannibals in one part of the country. And this is on the Brazil border. And they actually, if you've ever read The Lost City of Z, or there's a movie. Now, isn't it interesting? Amazon, Jeff Bezos, is within $5 billion being the richest man in the world. And the very first movie he produces is the Amazon, with the Amazon River and the whole story of Percy Fawcett. The Lost City of Z. I think there is so much going on. Then the other expedition is to another part of the world, and we're one of the greatest underground cities in the history of the world. And we're talking stuff that's literally miles and miles and miles, is in the former Eastern Bloc nations of Romania and Bulgaria. So, and ladies and gentlemen, these things cost a lot of money. They're, you know, we roll the profits in. And Tom, you've seen the quality of stuff we bring in, the cameramen, the sound men, the post-production. For instance, the soundtrack, I'm telling you what, Tim has 18 tracks of music in this, and we have a guy named Carlos as a production assistant, who also speaks Spanish, and I've learned three words, you know. I shouldn't learn more. But anyway, they're doing a marvelous job. We have a six-time Grammy Award-winning sound guy, six times, and he happens to live in Bozeman. The astonishing thing is that some of the interviews, these people will be dead and not along, and what is perplexing to me is the timing. I'm saying, Lord, I'm hoping that when people see the quality of speakers that are going to be there, that they're going to start to open up. I'm talking about military. I'm talking about, you know, the intelligence agencies. And here's a word that, and I'm going to share this. I know from past, and by the way, you're all welcome. If you're with the NSA, CIA, NRO, ABC, DEF, GHI, I don't care. You're welcome. Because here's a word that the Lord gave me. And you can pray about it. And I believe it's for these people I just mentioned. The very entities that you believe you're going to control, when they come forth, they're going to come forth with an appetite. And you think you control them, they will not be under your control. And you guys will be on the menu. Now, I didn't sit up late one night, because I'm up, you know, late all nights, but that's something that the Lord dropped in my spirit. So I want you to ponder that. Everybody in those three-letter, four-letter agencies, you know, ponder it. And you're all welcome. Just make sure you register soon, you know. And by the way, you know, Tom, we're seeing some very interesting feedback on Branson already. I get emails. Tim gets them. I assume you get them. I don't know. I haven't asked you about that. But what we're seeing is people really, really hungry. And Derek's book, you know, and I think it's great. You know, it's funny. Derek's interviewed me, I don't know, a dozen, two dozen times on Skywatch and their different updates, and now it's he has done a masterful job. And, you know, it's called The Great Inception, Satan's PsyOps from Eden to Armageddon. And I think his title is absolutely so specific, so concise, and so defined. Dr. Michael Lake will be talking about the Shinar from the Plains of Shinar directive. You know, L.A. is going to be talking about all of his ongoing stuff in South America and his Watcher series. Timothy will be talking about whatever he wants to talk about that's current. And, you know, we're going to be talking with the foremost explorer in the world when it comes to the underground city. So we want people to come. We want you to register. And I think Gordon said there's a limit, that we can't have as many people as the thing will seat. So please, ladies and gentlemen, go to Gen6Conferences.com. I'm excited about this. And you know this, Tom, you've tried to get me to speak at conferences for what? I don't know, since we've known each other?
Yeah, and how in the world does that work, that you've turned me down on all of my conferences, but then you head-tripped me saying that I owe you, that I have to speak at your conference, right?
Well, yeah, but you had made me a commitment at your breakfast table. And I will say this, yes, and you agreed to do it, so we're blessed. And ladies and gentlemen, I know that Tom is, you know, being gracious to come here, but again, it's, you know, now looking back at what we've done together, I think you can see where your presence is required. And I will say this, the Lord hath need of thee.
Well, hey, also, by that time, the time of the conference, I'm thinking that we will have met, hopefully, with the Smithsonian curators. So we'll have brand new information. And I've invited Michael Herring and his wife to be there. We'll be revealing the most up-to-date, groundbreaking discoveries. It's going to be visualized. In other words, people will see the images, the maps, all of it, all the pictures of what we discovered is going to be displayed. And then, of course, if people have the book, Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters, and the documentary film, we're going to be there. If they, you know, there's going to be a meet and greet. I don't know how they, you know, how do they register to do the meet and greet, to be able to meet with us. We can sign the stuff. But it's not just about getting our autograph. I'm certainly not, you know, I don't consider myself to be somebody who you need my autograph, but we're going to do that, but we're going to fellowship with people. How do they do the meet and greet?
I don't know that yet. It'll go up on the site. First of all, we got to decide how many people are coming, okay? And this, I'm leaving that stuff in Gordon's hands, you know? And again, there are people that are special. When I say special to the ministry, there are a lot of people that have prayed, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be curious to see how many people have been listening to you and I. How long have we been on talk radio together? Do you remember?
I don't know, a couple of decades. Well, I know that you and I were doing radio back when it was shortwave, and it was pre-2000 because we were talking about Y2K and what some people believed was going to happen during Y2K. So,
yeah, that would have been 1995.
It's been at least 20 years.
Yep. Well, you know, I'm troubled. One of my intercessors who was listening to the show in real time said she's been praying about this. And by the way, she prays and gets answers, and she takes it seriously. But she said, Lord, give me a word that relates to all this that's going to be taking place in the end days. And the word God gave her, this just comes in real time. That's what I love about doing this show with you, Doug, and Joe, and Tom. And we can respond in real time. And she said the word she got was gruesome. And then what's interesting, because I put it on my website years ago, my friend Romy Zarek, big-time intercessor, got a vision, and the Lord showed her black angels, I mean, they were dressed in black, coming down, singing beautiful music, and all the people were running after them, just like the Pied Piper, and they were leading them behind these ruins, and they were devouring them. Now, this was before the cannibal theme. I think she shared that with me close to 10 years ago. As a matter of fact, I'm going to twist her arm to have her resend it to me. But this theme, Tom, this theme is this, that, again, by ingesting human DNA, the DNA is changed. And this is why it's critical for people to understand something. We don't know our family trees, and I don't mean swinging from them. We don't know what our ancestors did, but we know the promise of the Bible. If any man be in Christ Jesus, behold, he's a new creation. Old things have passed away. And if you want to get the basic primer on superpositioning quantum physics, all you got to know is when Jesus said we're seated in heavenly places, you know, I mean, you know, where I am, there you may be also, you know, I'm in the Father, you're in me, and the whole thing in the book of John. The thing that's interesting is that that's superpositioning. So the spiritual realm that maybe even those in the time of the Gospels and Epistles, meaning at the time they were written, or the first century church couldn't really understand quantum physics, but they believed the Lord. Some maybe did, but most didn't. And you know, that's accounted to them for righteousness. So why I think this is so critical at this time is because you're going to have a xenogenetic world where every form of DNA is going to be inserted into the human genome. And I've said this before, and I stand on this. You know, you've heard me say it probably a dozen times. The entire human genome project was not to find the human genome, but to find the inhuman genome. The entire point of taking DNA swabs and all these ancestry dot this and that, those go into a data bank. Just like everything you think, do, and say, or type on your computer today is memorialized in some bloody, and I mean bloody, soon to be bloody data bank someplace, so is DNA. The most precious commodity in the world is information now. And those who are seeking information and want to control the information also want to control the the xenogenetic structure. I've got to share this. The book that I think is so critical for people to acquire, not because I wrote it, not because I researched it, but it's Xenogenesis. It's on my website. It's critical, ladies and gentlemen. It's absolutely critical because what Tom and I wrote together and unearthing the cloud eaters, or I'm sorry, you know, the whole issue of that is basically based on the history of the world, the creation of the world, the judgment of the pre-world, and all that has to, that it contains, you know, unearthing the lost world of the cloud eaters. And here's what's on: compelling evidence of the incursion of giants, their extraordinary technology, and imminent return. We could lay out every single thing point by point, but you've got to study these things. You've got to pray about them. You've got to see if these things be true.
Hey, Steve, I'm glad you brought up this whole point about Xenogenesis, because I want to say something about your book and also why you and I were just listed by the University of London as the leaders of the resistance, right? I'll say something about that in a moment. I want to just quickly add that at the conference, Anselm, as I understand it, he's going to be bringing the decades of information, some of which has been censored by the Vatican regarding what he actually already discovered, buried beneath an ancient Catholic church. So he's going to be bringing some of that information, also new discoveries, that is going to literally be revealed for the first time at that conference. Well, you and I are also going to be doing that. And so this is going to be a conference unlike anything else. I joked with you a moment ago, but the reason I agreed to participate in all of this, the book, the documentary film, the conference, is because I was shocked by what we found. I was shocked by what we uncovered. It is going to demand the history of the Americas be rewritten. I'm excited about us making this information available to the world. And again, I'm going to repeat that if a person pre-orders Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters or the Cloud Eaters Mega Offer, at skywatchtv.com. Go over there. You can watch the trailer. Right below the trailer at skywatchtv.com, right on the front page, you'll see this little ad. You can click on it. It'll take you into the store. And you can pre-order the new book, Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters, the new documentary film. And you get both of those at a discounted price, but then free, you get two other books. I'm really excited. I bought a train load of really high quality books that are also associated with you know, aspects of our research that we're going to be giving away free, plus this 24-hour, never released before, new audio series called Shadow Hand, 24 hours of me and Steve talking about everything in the world. You're going to get that free, too. But for Hagman listeners only, this is not advertised anywhere in the world. If you order this, if you make this pre-order, when you check out, either you'll see a like a place where you can order a, enter a promo code. But if you don't see that, just put it in the comments section. Just type in Hagman-Enoch. And if you do that, they're also going to include in your shipment the brand new hardback collector's edition of the Ancient Book of Enoch, which has the first ever narrative about how these giant cloud eaters arrived on Earth. Anyway, it's over $200 worth of stuff. And as Hagman listeners, we do that because we appreciate the Hagmans and we appreciate the audience that listens to them. Now, Steve, back to your xenogenesis stuff. You know, something that, and I know we only got about 30 minutes now. One of the other things that we should maybe quickly discuss is the science of genetic manipulation and engineering, because this was used by the ancient Watchers.
Yes, sir.
The Watchers were really genetic scientists. That's what they were. That's what they did. Every record talks about them using the DNA of humans and animals to create these exotic bodies. Well, listen, that's exactly what modern geneticists are doing today in the creation of chimeras and other exotic body forms, CRISPR-Cas9 technology, gene editing. This is exactly what we are doing today. And so the question is this: if indeed the activities of the Watchers was the use of biotechnology, they wouldn't have used that term. We use it today. But if that's what they were doing to produce these exotic bodies that have the, well, first of all, they have the ability to become a fit extension for incarnation by supernaturalism, but they also had this strange ability to reincarnate after physical death. Would the method of the returning from the grave in the end times, Jesus says, Matthew 24:37, as it was in the days of Noah, is the method for their returning in these end times a repeat of that kind of science? Now, I believe that could be the case. The Bible actually provides a record of that occurring, and we don't have time to go into this because we've talked about it before. And when people get the free 24-hour Shadow Hand collection, there's a whole section, 5 hours long in there by me and you, in which we describe how the story of Nimrod, where Nimrod began to be a Giborim, a giant, as it says in the Septuagint, exactly how that happened, how his genetics were modified. By the way, did Nimrod practice ritual cannibalism? Is that how his genetics were changed? It's kind of a secret. We don't really know. We just know that in the Hebrew Old Testament, it says his genetic makeup was changed, and he suddenly began to become an offspring of the Watchers. Very strange, right? All right, let's fast forward to modern days. Are scientists conducting the same thing today? Is this connected to Steve Quayle's book, Xenogenesis? A professor, S. Jonathan O'Donnell, he's a teaching fellow at the University of London. He very recently wrote a thesis titled Secularizing Demons, Fundamentalist Navigations in Religion and Secularity, in which he names me specifically, Tom Horn, redundantly in this article, as the leader of a growing transhumanist resistance group that he calls the Milieu. The Milieu, I think that's a French word, right? I looked it up. It simply means like a group of people. But he describes a particular brand of mostly evangelical believers and bioconservatives that he views as potentially dangerous anti-transhumanist apocalypticists that he warns could antagonize broad cultural tensions.
In other words, we're going to swallow their BS and become just like them. And by the way, you know, I think it's great. We are the transhumanist resistance. I love it, Tom. I do.
Yeah, but this is full on universe. Well, first of all, he sees me and you both as the leaders. He names you. He names you by name. He refers to your book, Xenogenesis. That's in the end note of his thesis. That's why I brought this up. He sees you as the sergeant of arms, and I don't know what title he really means by me. He continues to refer to Horns Milieu. But the point is, the thesis was selected and published in the prestigious quarterly peer-reviewed Academic Journal of Religion and Science, which is itself sponsored by the Center for Advanced Study in Religion and Science. Now, why is that important? Because these are the academic institutions that guide the development of curriculum, study programs, academic literature that's meant to influence religious and science leaders regarding convictions by which people make their fundamental decisions. In other words, here's what their website says. It says they do this thereby to revitalize and universalize the long-evolving wisdom and power inherent in the religious dimension of culture, to sponsor and conduct meetings, conferences, seminars, and lecture programs, to communicate the results of the Center for Advanced Study in Religion and Science activities through scholarly and popular journals, books, works of creative artists and mass media, and to publish scholarly journals. In other words, what they're saying is
we're the scholars, meaning those guys, and we're just, you know, gnats in their buzzing around their heads.
Well,
that's my
it's what they hope. What they hope is to influence and to guide through this slow progression and indoctrination the belief systems of religious people. So the bottom line is so that they can eventually reject, so that religious persons, Christians, will eventually reject conservatives, Bible believers like me and you, Steve, and Doug and Joe, and to convince them to accept a transhumanist agenda that's going to bring back the days of Noah, the lies of the Nakash, that men can be as gods, the lies of the cloud eaters, that the cloud eaters are our friends if we will only let them be. Now, I know I got to hurry, but because ancient transhumanism is absolutely related to the original sense of the Watchers, I believe, who saw that modifying humanity as a method of leaving their fixed habitation, as Peter and Jude discuss in the New Testament, quoting from the Book of Enoch, I also see that this modern transhumanist milieu, you, me, the other people they name, which I'll tell you in a moment before we run out of time. This is fulfilling the prophecy of Jesus. Steve, earlier you quoted some of the resources that said at the end of time, a body of men will be raised up.
Much clamor.
Yeah. The scientist, what was his name that said that?
Sir Isaac Newton.
Yeah, Sir Isaac Newton.
And by the way, he was from London, too. Maybe he's answering that guy in a prophetic way.
Yeah. Well, in any case, they refer to our demonology. He's a University of London professor. He describes our demonology. And let me make a couple of fast quotes here about what he says about us. And if somebody wants this document, it's 23, 24, 28, whatever pages it is. It's been published in academic literature over the last couple of months, naming me, Steve Quayle, and some other people as the leaders of the resistance, right? But here's what he says. He says, I'm quoting now, the individuals in this group are not formally affiliated, but rather coalesce around evangelical survivalist Thomas Horn. I didn't know I was a survivalist, but okay. Their primary hubs at present are Skywatch TV, coordinated by Derek Gilbert. And by the way, Derek Gilbert is also speaking at the conference coming up in September. The group's print works are mostly published through Horn's Publishing House Defender. Let me forward in this, because he just goes on and on. Horn's been featured heavily on the popular right-wing conspiracist website WorldNet Daily. I don't think Joseph Furr would like, you know, that, whatever, the way he's defined in this article. Close ties to other parts of the Christian right through his ally with Chuck Misler, serving as faculty at Misler's Koinonia Institute. Both Misler and Horn, the other members of the milieu, are part of the broader current of the third wave spiritual warfare, a neo-charismatic paradigm with dominionist influence. And it's interesting because you and I have been very public about rejecting the dominionist worldview. But anyway, dominionist influences that emerged in the 1980s become influential across the spectrum of conservative evangelicalism in the United States, drawing on the biblical image. Okay, so here's where it starts getting interesting. Drawing on the biblical image of the holy warrior. This paradigm, me and you, Steve, construct a worldview in which the spiritual, that is the heavenly, and material, that is the earthly worlds, act as intertwined battlefields in a cosmic struggle for the human soul, one waged against Satan, who has amassed an army of evil spirits that he is using to attack and demonize humans in an effort to win their souls for hell. He's doing all this sarcastically, but while projecting himself as a true Christian. He goes on, a clear example of this hermeneutic can be discerned in Horn's discussion of the causes and ends of radical enhancement, heaven and hell scenarios of human enhancement, drawing on Joel Guru's radical evolution and Francis Fukuyama's Our Post-Human Future. Let me jump forward here because I want to get to the part where he's quoting Steve Quayle. He goes on and on. He describes how our Melu ties all this to the narrative of the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11, in which a united human effort to build a tower to heaven brings divine judgment and forced dispersion of the nations. So he goes on, quote, for the Melu, the goal of Babel is human apotheosis. The act of building this blurs into the second quality, an act of becoming God, which is opposed to being. In other words, what he's saying here is Tom Horn and Steve Quayle are opposed to the idea of the angels who left their estate, their place of being where God put them.
Probably show up at his house, Tom.
Yeah, requote, both Babel and Watcher narratives can be constructed as modalities of the fall, lambasting New Age and neo-pagan notions of inner personal divinity as attempts to recreate Babel by uniting all peoples under one faith. Horn writes, pagans argue that a principle of inner divinity is older than Christianity, which is true. The gospel, according to such New Age concepts, a gospel of becoming God, is old as the fall of man. It began when the serpent said to the woman, you shall be as God, and it will zenith during the reign of the Antichrist God King. Anyway, he goes on, he talks about Sharon Gilbert, all this stuff. If somebody wants this, I'll send it to them. It's a 9,000-word academic dissertation. I actually paid to get a copy that was published in the Journal of Religious and Science Journal. It's his treatise. He's working on his PhD, but he's also a professor at the University of London. But he says, Steve, that for demonologists like me and you, and Steve specifically, transhumanism is connected to an apocalyptic vision in which technoscience initiates the end times and the worst aspects of a demonized humanity will be unleashed. Salvation will be lost to all but the remaining unenhanced survivors. He's saying this, by the way, based on your book, Xenogenesis.
Good.
Immortality and transcendence, he says, again talking about you, will be achieved by artifice alone, in which the perfecter perfects itself through the perfection that it wills itself to be, and the keystone of Babel is finally set in fulfillment of a promise offered by a serpent in a garden long ago. Creation becomes finally and forever an utter and irrevocable outlaw. Now, very quickly, I know we're going to run out of time. Here is an important end to his analysis and where he and religious transhumanists like him seek to stereotype and diminish and conquer and divide. Watch what he says here at the conclusion of this thesis, which was published in a peer-reviewed journal. The article here, I'm quoting now, quote, This article mainly uses evangelical to refer to the subset of conservative evangelicals known as fundamentalists. While evangelicalism can broadly be categorized by its emphasis on conversion experience, biblical authority, the centrality of the crucifixion, and activist commitment to good works, fundamentalism emerges as one specific part of this paradigm. Now listen, indeed, many evangelicals would deny association with fundamentalist paradigms like Horn and Quayle's milieu, which Matthew Avery Sutton defines as radical apocalyptic evangelicalism. The relation between fundamentalism and evangelicalism is multifaceted, however, and complicated by the use of the terms to refer both to specific historical movements and broader ideologies. In the United States, the conscious rebranding of conservative fundamentalists as evangelicals in the 1940s also complicates differentiation in contemporary contexts, not least since it obscures, among others, listen to this, the evangelical left, by which he means pro-transhumanist believers that call themselves evangelicals. They continue, quote, the group we've explored, Tom Horn, Steve Quayle, and their milieu, could be designated as evangelical fundamentalists, or neither. Its members self-identify as evangelicals or conservative Christians and arise from the conservative evangelical tradition that runs through Billy Graham, Jerry Falwell, and Pat Robertson. Let me stop here for a moment. Note, he picks the three evangelicals that he imagines has the most negative labels historically to try to lump me and you in with them. Me and you've never been involved with any of the above, but he tries to lump it all together. Let me continue this short quote and then I'll quit. Their emphasis, back to Tom Horn, Steve Quayle, their emphasis on spiritual warfare, however, derives from Pentecostalism, specifically from the neo-charismatic third wave of the 1980s. Furthermore, despite claims to ideological purity and the primacy of biblical authority, these members draw heavily from pagan mythologies. Let me end quote here for a moment. He doesn't take time to elaborate. He just gives this broad mischaracterization that we're basing all this on pagan mythologies. Illuminous conspiracies and ufology and ancient alien hypothesis, and then in parentheses he says this, Horn, Putnam, and Quayle. This group is thus difficult to classify, and this article uses evangelical mainly as a way of locating in the United States cultural context with which it is most consciously aligned, end quote. And then he mentions the members of the milieu. He talks about, Steve, the church that you and I are pastoring, so we might as well mention who he mentions here. Here's the leaders of the milieu, Thomas and Nita Horn. Poor Nita, little pony girl, right, using therapy ponies, but all of a sudden she's part of the milieu. Steve Quayle, Chuck Misler, Michael Bennett, Gary Stearman, Sharon and Derek Gilbert, Douglas Hamp, Chris Putnam, who of course is now deceased, Michael Lake, John McTernan, Michael Lake, by the way, is also speaking at the conference, John McTernan, Noah Hutchings, who's also now deceased, Donna Howell, really? Give me a break. Donna Howell, Larry Spargimino of Southwest Radio Church, Douglas Krieger, Douglas Woodward, Paul McGuire, Fred DeRuvo, which I personally haven't heard from in a decade, Carl Tykrib, Gary Bates, Russ Dizdar, Michael Hoggard, Terry James, Terry Cook, and Frederick Meekins, among others. So now you know who makes up the mysterious conspirators, the milieu, the resistance organization under Tom Horn and Steve Quayle that are evidently the enemies of the transhumanist revolution and, I think, the rebirth of the Watchers technology that seeks to bring back the days of Noah.
Well, I actually, I feel that he's done a really good case in spelling it out. You know, I pray that the Lord takes him by his own words. We may have a milieu, that just means the family or the cadre of people, but he's got the meow, 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 and he may have a PhD piled higher and deeper, but I'll tell you what, he needs to cut through the BS of Bravo Sierra. He needs to quit swallowing that which came off the fan. I'm not name calling, but what I'm saying is this. Ladies and gentlemen, what you're going to see, and I think, Tom, no offense, he just made our case. People who stick to the Word of God, people who acknowledge Jesus as Lord and Savior, this is a classic hit piece of identify, vilify, nullify, destroy. Okay, I want to say that again. Identify, vilify, nullify, and destroy. It doesn't matter that some of the things he says, hey, I could absolutely say, you know what, I agree with you, but since when does horse manure, and I'd like to use it in more blunt than that, qualify as good scholarship? What he has is an opinionated piece. He has no argument. See, what he's doing is he's going to the classic mode of attacking the messenger, but he can't even deal with, for instance, Bill Joyce, why the future doesn't need us anymore. And if you go on Drudge any day, and I'm just using that because it's the biggest website of this kind in the world, I mean, Ridley Scott, aliens exist and will come for us. The preoccupation with aliens is the same thing that the Vatican, what you and Chris wrote about. So while he can, you know, take us on as the, what is it again he calls us? The I love it. I want someone to make a T-shirt. No. The transhumanist resistance?
Yeah, I mean, he refers to us as the resistance. And again, people that want that would like a copy. I had to buy it. It was published in the peer-reviewed Academic Journal of Religion and Science.
Coming from London,
he is a professor that teaches at the University of London. And as a matter of fact, I emailed him. I tried to get in contact with him. So far, he's not returned my email. Hopefully, he or somebody that...
Fuck, meow, meow, meow. Those are my sound effects.
Yeah. Thanks for the sound effects. But yeah, he has not responded. If he does, then you know, I'll be honest to report whatever it is that he wants to say. There's people that are not in that end list at the end of his article that he also mentions. Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. He tried to take everybody who is maybe a leading voice right now in the prophecy circle. The people that are talking about world events and trying to put them into perspective, and tried to, you know, castigate them in whatever way that he could. And of course, the Center for Advanced Study in Religion and Science, that's like a mother organization over the Journal of Religion and Science, and they're very associated with the University of London. And the research that I did, I found out that this is like the number one. It's the number one organization in the world with the largest reach. So these people have full-on decided that they're going to take me and you to task, Steve, and they're going to do the best they can to try to stereotype us as on the fringe and, you know, to whatever, you know, to try to get people not to listen to us or to perceive us as too much on the fringe, too radicalized, whatever the milieu. But the point is, I wear it as a badge of honor. The minute that I saw this was published, I was like, wow, thank you very much. Thank you for identifying us as the biggest problem that you have on planet Earth to stop the spread of Christian transhumanism. I appreciate it. It's a great deal. I love you. Thank you.
Me too. Here's the ultimate point that I think if we can make this point tonight and people pray about it, take it to the Lord. The one thing that Satan hates, the one thing the fallen angels hate, is the fact that we're creating the image and likeness of a living God, and they're not. They have tried to destroy that image. Everything that God created and he saw that it was good in the book of Genesis has been genetically or modified from the weather to everything that God created was good for our benefit. Every blessing he's given. This guy, this University of London professor, again, I would say this, you need to go down to the city of London, Mr. Whatever your name is, and go talk to the boys that bring out the giants, Gog and Magog. And sir, while you're at it, you need to learn the legends of the British Isles, and you need to go look up Boudica, and you need to deal with all of the your history. You need to go and look at the giant chalk figures. You need to go and look at the evidence beyond your arrogance and beyond your implied pseudo-intelligence. By the way, if there's an artist out there, I'm going to make an offer, okay? If there's an artist, and you're a skilled artist, you know, some of you who have ever done graphic novels, if you want to come up with a really cool design for the transhumanist resistance or takeoffs of it, you know, I'll give you $500, and I mean that, because I would like, then what we'll do is we'll give it to Doug and let, you know, I'll pay for the design, Doug, and then people can have t-shirts. I'll wear it. I am the resistance to transhumanism, you know.
I love that we have gifted names, the resistance.
Yeah, so here's the thing. You know, when I started writing about, and look, I'm only saying this because it's the middle of Drudge tonight, Rise of the Sex Machines. I remember talking about that in Genetic Armageddon about 15 years ago, $15,000 robot companion. What they're doing is the very thing I quote all the time, except the days be shortened, there be no flesh left alive. They are absolutely emasculating the American male. They're providing him with the, robotic release he needs. Same thing for women, and everything is dehumanizing. So that guy can basically choke on his own vomit, that is my opinion, and does, because all he's doing is regurgitating, I would say, an inherent arrogance that he knows better than us, and that, you know, the thing is, Tom, you wrote Blood on the Altar. Ladies and gentlemen, if there was ever a prophetic book written that needs to be gotten from all of you, you need to get it from Skywatch. Is it on your shopping cart?
Yeah, I mean, it is, and it's been amazing because that book,
we did do
a Hagman show on it at the time, Blood on the Altar, but it is amazing how prophetic that book has been and how much it's being fulfilled today.
We are living
it. I want to tell
Tom.
People, we have not even scratched the surface of what's in Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters book in the upcoming documentary film. I mean, there's so much stuff, the macaw, the scarlet macaw, the birds that were brought from Mesoamerica, an influence of the Aztec and the Maya that came down through the Anasazi trade routes in the earliest part of American history. People don't know anything about this at all, but the reason why the macaw birds were important has to do with their association with being able to communicate with the unseen realm. The macaw, because they can talk, these are exotic birds that can speak, like parrots, right? They were perceived by these early cultures as being almost like what we would call a familiar, you know, like the witches would use a black cat, a familiar, or they would transform into a black cat. And provide this bridge between the other world. There's an entire section in our book that provides information around why they were using the birds, the macaw, and their feathers and their dance rituals, how they wound up here in the United States. They are what we today call the United States, early America. They tried to actually raise and breed them here, but it didn't work because they can't survive in the desert. Midwest here, but they were doing this because they saw them as intermediaries between this reality and another reality, and this goes back to the Book of Enoch and how it says they sinned against the animals, they begin modifying the animals. Did they do something? Did they create animals that have the ability of language to communicate with another reality? It sounds strange, right? But the more and more...
No, I can't resist. No, it doesn't sound strange, because I just... You just read to me a literal proof that dumbasses can speak.
Well, but also that animals can see into the spirit realm. This is a biblical precept.
Yes.
Balaam's donkey, right?
A yep,
biblical
that's what I'm
precept
referring
to. That some animals can see into the spirit realm. Well, the pagans, though, they believed that the macaw and their ability to speak, and they were using languages to communicate with an unseen realm in a way that today nobody does. The, you know, animals that can repeat sounds, languages, nobody, they don't think nothing about it, right? But that was not true in the ancient world. We uncover stuff like that. We uncover references in Ezekiel 13 of the magic bed of Babylon and Og, thus saith the Lord God, woe to the women that create the kasetot, the magic bands. These were the copper armbands, Steve, that you were talking about earlier today, that can bind the giants, or that can allow for the release of the giants up from the underworld. People don't know that this is actually even, it's in the Bible, it's in the book of Ezekiel. So we break all of that down. The hags, the ghosts, and the kiva, in the kivas in early American belief, the gateway to another dimension. Anyway, I know we're out of time, but the whole point is we didn't even get started tonight on the level of information that is covered. The new giant study that uncovers that rare DNA changes that can affect human height. And that right now in the United States of America, talk about your book, Xenogenesis, right now in America, and this is the largest study of its kind to date, the International Genetic Investigation of Anthropomorphic Traits, or the acronym GIANT Consortium, has uncovered 83 new DNA changes that affect human height. And this is one of the largest studies in the United States of America. It involves roughly 250,000 people that are being studied for one explicit reason, and that is to locate what in the human genetic code leads to gigantism. Now, why in the world would they be all that concerned about finding this genetic code that leads to gigantism? Anyway, there's so much information. Get the book, get the DVD, make sure you register for the conference in Branson, Missouri. There's going to be probably 3,000 people there. You're going to be hearing a lot about this in mainstream media and news in the coming weeks. But nobody else has the Hagman special. Hagman-Enoch is the promo code. Do that at skywatchtv.com. And I look forward to meeting people, Steve, at our conference in September.
This is going to be great,
again,
guys. It's going to be great.
Thank you, Doug.
And Tom, I just want to say thank you so much. I want to remind people, Hagman Enoch, in the promo code or in the notes section. But go ahead, Steve. Go ahead and, Steve, close it out. Tom, thank you so much. Steve, thank you. Steve, close it
You're
out
welcome.
For us.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're seeing what we've been warning about for decades now, the vilification of the identification, the vilification, nullification, and ultimately the death of those who will not bow down to the image of the beast, whether it's robotic, whether it's a composite, whether it's a chimera. I would encourage you all, and because this is so prescient that people are now starting to identify, there is a resistance. Again, I want to make this clear. Please, if you're an artist, I'll give $500 to the winning artist that comes up with basically the transhumanist resistance, a logo, even a secondary statement, that Doug can get the t-shirts printed and you'll be able to support Doug. And by the way, I just put Doug all my books, all of them, everything I've written with the exception of the new one, into the Steve Quayle Total Collection. There's a story today on, Drudge, that people are turning away from electronic books. I think that's a good thing. People never understood the whole point in going to electronic medium was to be able to control everything that was ever written. So, you know, my special, I think, is $120 off. It's everything I've written, and I think it'll be a blessing to you in the years to come. Just go to stevequayle.com. Hagman.com, and again, Gen6Conferences.com. Looking forward to meeting everybody. I think it's going to be a conference that basically is unparalleled, because unless you go to the conference, you're not going to see some of the stuff, because we're just not putting it out publicly.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thank you, Tom. We're at the very end of our show. God bless you guys. Have a great night. Until tomorrow.